Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer, how laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature, with over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
When you haven't found love, it can feel like everyone else has. It's in every movie, every song, and all the PDA. Looking for love sucks. Thankfully, California Psychics can give you the guidance you need to find the one. We guarantee if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. And new customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com and experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
He's Mike Youngers, and he's next.
And now, from the legendary Studio B, so you're in Seattle with Gregor.
It's awesome when you run into people that you have no idea that they have like another life, how they pay the bills sometimes, where they come from, their upbringing. Just passing Mike in the hall, I was like, what do you do, man? What's your thing? How do you make money when you're not here? He told me his family's in the auctioneering business. That's awesome. I don't even know what that, I just assume he goes, $5 burrito sold to $5 to that stupid ginger beard guy. Turns out there's a whole lot more to it than that, and that I just probably really insulted him by being an idiot. Right. Now, this thing's being a real pain in the ass today because,
fantastic.
You know, radio station technology. How you feeling about that? You feeling good?
Feeling good.
Yeah.
Feeling right.
Like a chick magnet shirt. That's fun.
Right? It's one of my favorites. I always love having the wacky shirt going on.
Do you commute up here every day?
I do.
From where?
Enumclaw.
Oh, wow,
Enumclaw,
man.
Washington. There are some days, those are the rare occasion where I can actually find parking at that very minimal parking garage down at the bus station in Auburn. But most of the days I'm driving all the way up here.
Do you check that first? Do you like go to Auburn to be like, hey, is there any parking?
I used to check it a lot more, but then there are days where it's like, you know what, I'm running kind of late, so I'm just going to bypass and go straight out.
Just being defeated?
Yeah.
What is your official gig right now within Intercom?
Within Intercom, I am working for the men's room on KISW. I am their call screener, their audio producer, and their news guy.
Oh, cool.
I read the news at 5:30.
Do you write the news also?
No. I find other stories, and then I kind of put my own spin on it. So
Sure, of course.
But I'm not doing any kind of journalism or anything like that.
Now, I know you because you used to wander around here just doing street team stuff and like just hanging out. And that's like the story of like many a radio person is that you start off just...
on that promotions team.
But it's funny because you're one of those faces that even when I didn't, like, couldn't like remember your name and stuff, you were just always around. I would see you all the time. And so like, but you take notice of that when
you
run into a guy.
Right.
That's absolutely right, man. So, it's there's like people ask me all the time how do you get into radio, and I'm just go. Just
show up, yeah.
Just show up and don't be a dick.
Exactly.
Just like be cool for once and just hustle, man.
Yeah,
be quiet about it.
I actually was the men's room's intern for a few months, and you know, and what was weird is they actually liked the way that I was their intern. They liked the work that I was putting in. And it didn't make sense because they told me stories of other interns that they had that they would sit in there in the office and just be on their phone the entire time. They wouldn't. It's like a teacher told me when I was just getting started that internships are our job applications.
Yeah.
You know, use that to your advantage. That is free time for you to be in a professional setting with people that you want to be with. And so I worked my tail off, and then they said, yeah, you should join the street team. And I did that, and I just kind of hung around, and I started doing some overnights, watching the board during the holiday season. And here I sit.
This is a classic story of how people get into radio, specifically in a top 100 market. Like that's to explain, the market size is done by listenership and the region of the metropolitan area, that type of stuff, right?
Right.
And so if you're in a top 100, top 75 market, like even though it might be Tucson, Arizona, or whatever, that might, you might not consider that a big market or whatever. It's still harder to get into than, say, like a little like Duluth or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
Des Moines, Iowa.
It's like got to be a tougher one to get into. And right. So Reno, Nevada is like market 150 or something like that. That one's a little, probably a little easier. You apply yourself a little harder.
Right.
But it's crazy because if you just hang out around here and you show a little initiative that goes a long way, because it's a bunch of slackers. We're all a bunch of slackers.
Exactly. Everybody's hanging back, drinking beers. Nobody cares.
Yeah, looking to like have a job out of it. And so, like, if you can impress the other slackers by doing anything, So get off your damn phone when you're interning at a place like this and just do something.
And it's not that hard. You just put your mind to it and you just start working. And then, like you said, they take notice of it. After a while, it's like, that guy's been walking around here an awful lot. You know, I got one upstairs that I've noticed. She's been around just, she showed up one day and then she just quit not showing up. She was just always there. So, and now I think she's on the in-office promotions team upstairs.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Sure, whatever.
Yeah, you know it.
Yeah, they're doing some office work and just trying to make some hours and getting paid all of a sudden.
That's right.
Yeah, it's crazy, dude.
That's right.
So, the reason why you piqued my interest for something other than just being a good dude and like hanging out and being
right on
pleasant is that we had a conversation at some point around the way, and
yeah,
I was
did.
Like, so what's your thing? And you're like, oh, well, my dad's an auctioneer, and so I'm in, my family's in the auctioneering business.
Right.
And I'm, you blew my mind because I've never.
That's how I have a comfort behind the microphone.
And which is fantastic because I'm sure you've developed a lot of. Now it's a different thing when you get behind the radio microphone. It's suddenly a new game. Talking to you, yeah.
Which could eventually make its way out to millions of people, but they're not all in front of me. I can't see their judging faces.
Yeah,
so,
right.
But
there's a certain sort of comfort in that, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had gotten on the auction block a couple times before I got into radio. And I stepped into the studio for the first time, sat down, and of course I was shaking like everybody else who started radio, just terrified. And I had my little sheet, and I'm looking at it, and I read it out, and I was like, there's nobody here to tell me.
Do you ever feel like a crazy person because you're telling jokes to yourself?
A little bit. When you tell a joke and there's no laughter, that does get awkward. But,
yeah.
You know.
It's a weird business that we're crazy people in tiny rooms talking to ourselves.
Exactly.
It's very strange.
And they wonder why we go nuts.
Okay, so... Am I accurate in saying that it's a family history that you guys, that's the family business?
Absolutely.
Sort of?
Absolutely. It all started with my grandfather, who has unfortunately passed a couple months ago. But he listened to a song, and I don't know if you've ever heard it before. It's called the Auctioneer Song.
Okay.
It's online. Yeah, you got to write that one down. It's an old song, but it's a fun song, and he listened to it, and he absolutely loved it and decided that he wanted to become an auctioneer because of it.
What are we talking here? Like, what? Give me an era.
Oh... 40s, 50s, something like that.
So he was kind of a young guy and decided that's what he wanted to do.
That's right.
It wasn't like a change of heart at 71. He was like, I'm going to be an auctioneer.
That's right. His dad was a woodworker, and he didn't feel that at all, and he decided he wanted to be an auctioneer. And I don't quite know his story. That's my bad, unfortunately, but he did eventually own his own auction barn. He sold furniture. He sold cattle. He sold cars. He sold all manner of things. And then from there, the tree just started branching out. It started with his son, my father, who started learning to become an auctioneer, and he was really the first one to move into the auctioneering business. But then his sister became an auctioneer, and then his nephew on the other side of his family became an auctioneer, and now here I sit as an auctioneer. I started as a ringman. I've got like two other ringmen that are within my family, and then two or three other people that have been clerks and financial managers of auction industries. So my family has completely enveloped this industry, so it's hard to kind of go around anywhere within the Northwest that hasn't heard of our name as far as auctions.
Oh, that's so... You just said a million things that now I need to know about, because I guess I never really thought about what the purpose of... In the 40s and 50s, what the purpose of an auction would be. It doesn't have to be back in that day. Like when you said auction barn, was it the type of thing where the community would come by and there was an auctioneer's barn and
yes,
you bring your stuff there and everyone would gather on the third Saturday of the month?
That is exactly right. You know what? You got an old couch that you need to get rid of, but you spent a lot of money on it. You don't want to throw it away, and you know that there's still value left in it. Then you take it to the auction barn. The auctioneer is used for items that create a demand. You know, you can't go into Walmart with an auctioneer and just have him go, because there's so many different things of so many There's so much variety of so many different things that there's no point to have an auctioneer. But if, you know, this water bottle here, this one is a unique water bottle. It's got the stickers that I put on it. It's got the color that I chose. This is a unique, now granted it's easily replicated, but sure. It is a unique water bottle. Okay, this is what you would auction off because more than one person could say, I want this. So the point of an auctioneer is to sell to the highest bidder. You know, and this is going to get sketchy, but back in the day it was used for slavery.
Oh, yeah, I can only imagine.
Right, slavery and cattle and livestock and all that kinds of things where they are different on a case-by-case basis. Whereas you'd pay $120 for this one, you'd only pay about $95 for this one.
This guy's stronger than that guy, or this exactly. guy knows.
This one's going to produce more milk, or this one's going to, I'm talking about cows.
Thank you. Thanks for the clarification.
As soon as I started talking, I was like, wait a minute, he's not talking about cows. Yeah, this one's going to be a better beef cattle. This one's going to be a good for plowing. This one's, so.
This car's got the original headers.
Exactly.
That type of thing.
This car's a classic. This car's a junker. This, yeah.
Well, okay, so. How much of that requires you to be an expert on the item versus a BSer about what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Now, in order to be an auctioneer in whatever industry that you're in, there's actually many different auctioneers. There's cattle auctioneers, there's auto auctioneers, there's furniture auctioneers, there's charity auctioneers, there's real estate auctioneers, there's antique auctioneers. And so whatever market that you decide to go into, yes, you do need to be very knowledgeable, especially the quote-unquote professional markets, which are basically anything other than like real estate or a charity auction where people are just going there to kind of get a buy or get a steal. Whereas, you know, in like the auto auction industry or the cattle auction industry, where these guys are doing business trying to actually make a living off of what you're selling them. They know their product very well, and they will take advantage of somebody that doesn't know their product.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, you do. And if you don't know, then you need to have somebody next to you that does, be it an MC, be it a representative, a car dealer, a cattle dealer, somebody like that.
I mean, so can you BS your way through part of it? I mean,
absolutely.
Okay, so you say that you got to be you got to be super knowledgeable about your thing, but you also got to be able to spin a yarn a little bit.
Exactly, and you got to know when to not hang on things that you can't hang on to.
What do you mean?
Like when you're describing a car, if you don't know anything about the car, it's got 200,000 miles on it. It's an 04 model. What do you got to get for it? And away you go.
Okay. Wow. Do you ever, just like looking at the thing and picking up on details as your like stream of consciousness?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're trying to sell an item and it is not bringing what it needs to bring, then yes, your observation of what it is will help in that situation. You know, you say, come on guys, it's got, like you said, it's got the original headers on it. It's still got the tires are all still good on it. It's the original miles. Nothing's been done to it. The engine hasn't been changed. And then the information that you bring could potentially raise the bid.
Wow. The only capacity that I can really think of much auctioning is like kind of like a, I don't know, it's kind of like the standard guy talking fast and pointing at people and going, 500, you know, that type
common
of thing.
Common misconception, yeah.
Yeah, right. But I guess that's the stereotype or the
exactly
the trope of what it is. That's your character.
Mm-hmm.
I've only ever really paid attention to Barrett Jackson. Mm-hmm. I'm a big race cars fan and stuff. And so after the Formula One race or whatever, Barrett Jackson will come on, or it used to. Now it's different, but that'll come on.
They got a bunch of different classic.
And the next thing
auctions.
You know, like I'm looking at some like fancy yellow Corvette, and I don't give a crap about a Corvette, but I'm just listening to some guy talk about it, and mm-hmm. it's not that rapid fire thing. Is there an industry out there still? Is there an auction industry out there that still uses kind of a rapid fire, like that sort of hustle?
Oh, absolutely. The thing is with the Barrett Jackson is because it's got such a public public interest, they do need to slow it down a little bit because nobody can understand the auctioneer, and the people that are buying are not professional buyers; they're collectors. So they're not people that are going to try and make a living off of what they're buying at the Barrett Jackson. So you do get that ground. I've got $200,000. Somebody give 210. Right? It's going to be a very grand thing. Whereas when you get to the auto auction industry, where these are dealers where they need to sell the cars that they buy this weekend, then you're going to get that 14, not one, but a bit, not one, and not two, but a bit, not three, and not four, but a bit, not five, but a bit, not five. Sold out. 14.4.
Okay. Now
and then they move on to the next.
Now slow that down. What you just did right there. unless it's secrets that you don't want to share. Slow that down and tell me what you were saying.
Really, I used two fillers, or as they called it in school, dirts, which is but I gotta be, but I have, but I've got to be, or but I bid. And that's the whole thing, is that with auctioneering, it is so much more about tempo and rhythm than it is with what you're saying and how you're saying it. Wow. You know, as because when those hip hop things came out, which you saw, I know that you saw
yeah,
those,
yeah, yeah.
Those are... cattle auctioneers with the hip hop beats behind them, that proved the point that auctioneering is so much more about rhythm.
Yeah.
You listen to these guys.
And so wait, to point out what you're saying right now, it's a video where there's an auctioneer and then someone went back and added like either a rap beat or an EDM beat to it. So that way it's almost like he's performing like a hip hop song with an auctioneer spitting game real fast. There.
Exactly. So your tempo can be fast, your tempo can be slow, but as long as you keep that tempo, then it just keeps on going.
Wow, that's crazy,
so,
dude.
And you'll find that with the good auctioneers that you listen to, you can actually find their tempo. There's one that works at the auto auction that I work at where every time I hear him, I start bouncing because he's got such a rhythmic and bouncy chant to him that you can't help but just kind of dance to it a little bit.
God, that's so cool. What's your family's business in terms of auctioning? What type of auctions do you guys do?
That's kind of hard to explain.
Okay.
My dad, who's really the big auctioneer, he does auto auctioneering for most of the time. That's where he gets his regular paycheck from. And then the part that's really got the entire family interested and into is the charity auction side of it. But the thing is that the charity auctions only come in on weekends, and there's about two different seasons for weekends. There's a lot of fall auctions and there's a lot of spring auctions.
Sure. Like, for instance, I went to the Seattle Humane charity benefit thing, Tuxes and Tails, and they're trying to get people to give $100,000.
Exactly.
And so there's a guy up there with his fancy wingtip shoes up there being like, all right, do I hear anyone else for $100,000?
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Go out there at 7 o'clock at night on a Saturday in fall or spring.
Sure.
Which is the perfect time to go because it's either raining, it's probably raining outside, so nobody wants to be outside all that much, whereas in the fall or in the summer, everybody's outside, or in the winter, nobody wants to go out, period. So.
Sure.
But that's really the fun side of it. I've been taking part in charity auctioneering since I was 13 years old, but I've been the ringman. I've been that guy that's running out on the floor just shouting,
yeah. Yup! Okay, so. So there's a bunch of terminology. We'll get to that here in a minute, actually.
Sure,
but
sure.
So dad makes the money off of the...
auto auctioneering.
Now, does that mean growing up that when you needed a ride that you had an angle to go for?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay.
Unfortunately, no, because that is a wholesale car auction. It is a dealer's only. Only dealers get to buy, and it is really frowned upon. And in fact, almost... Yeah, they say don't. Auctioneers do not buy off of the block.
Okay.
So because the people are trying to make a living, both the dealers and the auction. So
you got a reputation to uphold that.
That's right.
So when you say, okay, so dealers come in and are they buying bulk cars, or is it a car at a time, or?
They are buying it a car at a time. They buy the cars that go across the block, but they generally buy themselves like a fleet of cars.
What's the block?
The block. See, that's the thing. As I said this to somebody else, and they had no idea what it meant. I work at a car auction that has 10 different lanes. 10 different lanes that they can run cars through, and they
do
at the same time. They are running 10 cars through, just like you see at the Barrett Jackson.
Yeah.
They have that car come out, and he sits in front of the stand with the auctioneer on it that is called the block. He is standing there on his block, up at his podium, up at his microphone, and he is selling the car. As soon as the car is done, the car rolls out, and then the next one comes up. We have 10 lanes doing that all at the same time.
How many auctioneers?
10 auctioneers.
Oh, wow. So when one guy's done, the next just rapid fire to the next vehicle? Or?
The thing is, they are all selling at the same time. This isn't lane one's on, now lane two's on. This is.
Then you would just need one lane, I guess.
Exactly. We are selling like 1,100 cars amongst 10 lanes in just a matter of hours. So we need to get those things cranking through.
Wow. So does, like, how did the different dealerships monitor 10 lanes?
Well, they are printed out a list of cars that are running through the sale. They figure out which cars that they're going to want and where they need to go to find that car. And then they do have little screens up that say, hey, lane 2 is on car number 56, lane 3 is on car number 58. And so on and so forth. And
is this how I end up, like, when I go use car shopping, when I'm there and they're like, oh, we got this one that just rolled in. They just came from an auction where they picked up 10 different cars and then now they're...
That is absolutely right. They picked up all these cars at a used car auction.
It's not just trade-ins.
Well, not necessarily used car auction, but a wholesale car auction. It's trade-ins. There are factory sales in which... you go to, you used to be able to go to like a budget rental and then buy the car that you wanted. Yeah, they put a stop to that after a while because the dealerships and the factories rather, not the dealerships, the factories would sell these cars to the rental agencies for a deeply discounted price because they're buying, you know, 50 of their cars. They'd buy them at a discounted price, and then they would turn around and sell them for a lesser price than the, you know, like the Ford dealerships are selling for. The Ford factory sells to the Ford dealerships as well as, you know, the rental cars.
So you're undercutting the manufacturer then.
And so the manufacturer said, well, you need to stop that. So now they started buying back their cars from the rental agency for a different price. They kind of almost traded them straight across, and then they run them through the auction, and then only Ford dealers can buy those cars.
That's crazy, because that's where, as a kid, that's where all the family cars came from. My dad had a guy at the Hertz or the Budget or whatever. He had a guy that was a broker just in rental cars.
Yeah.
And so that guy worked with all the different rental car companies, and he had a lot just full of, like, year-old rental cars.
Exactly.
And so he'd
brand
pick up a
new
car with 9,000 miles on it or whatever.
Got them for cheap. Absolutely.
Oh, wow. So that's, they don't do that anymore.
No. Now we have commercial auctions. Is that right? Yeah, commercial sales. We have used car sales. We have trade-ins. We have cars that come down from Canada. And they run on these different lanes, and then the dealers figure out which lane that they should be in. You know, they got just random dealer lanes for like five of their lanes, and then these ones are factory cars, and then these ones are Canadian cars that came over the border, so they know which cars they can and want to bid on, which cars they can't and don't want to bid on, and then they just kind of stick around those lanes.
How the hell do you coordinate 10? Like, where's the facility for this? How do you do 10 lanes worth of stuff?
That is down in Kent. It is right off of the main drag there, right off of Central.
Wow, man.
And they have a fleet of people that are working down there, all of which, they have a bunch of drivers down there. They have people that are coordinating specific lanes that are saying, okay, this car needs to go now, this car needs to go now. And then they got somebody who's working up front that is directing cars to the lane that they need to go to. Everything's stickered so that it says this is lane four's car number 25. And then it goes to lane four and then runs.
Wow, you think the guys that run Paint in the Grass or whatever, or summer camp, those guys are working hard. That sounds like a crazy thing.
Buddy.
How often are these things?
This is a weekly auction.
Holy crap.
So every Wednesday.
Rolling through 1,100, let's say 1,000 cars every Wednesday?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And that's just for Western Washington, right?
That's right. That is just for Western Washington, and this company has auctions all over the nation.
Yeah, so there's a Portland, a Sacramento, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Las Vegas, Dallas, Denver, yeah.
Now, is this a company that your family then would work with to do this, or the one that you started, or like, are you hired as auctioneers to come in and handle this?
Yeah, you know what? That's a part of it that I haven't really, really fully understood. We are hired by the auction to come in, and a lot like radio stations, you go to an auction and ask for a job. They're not hiring, so you got to walk in and just kind of watch the auction for a while, and then after a while they say, you know what, this guy's been standing around, maybe we can get him to spot some bids, which is just kind of look for the bids that the auctioneer can't see. And then after a while, you know, some auctioneer gets sick and he's like, well, I just brought my microphone just handedly, and so then he gets up on the block and then he starts working.
Wow. So, weird.
Yeah, cutthroat business, man.
That's crazy. So you guys just carry microphones in your pockets?
Absolutely.
What?
Mine's in my car.
Are you serious?
Yes. I'm serious. I got a little headset mic down in my car.
Oh,
that
just
I bring with me
just in
week.
Case someone's like, man, we're shorthanded.
That's
and you're
right.
Like, here I am.
Or I need a break. It's like, okay, I'm set. I'm good to go.
This is crazy. Okay. You mentioned a few things here. You mentioned at the auction barn, you got ring something or other, clerks.
Mm-hmm. Ringmen and clerks.
Okay. So, when you start as a kid doing this, where do you start?
I personally started as a ringman. And what a ringman is more commonly known as is a bid spotter, but he's much more than a bid spotter. And what he does is if the auctioneer is looking to his left and asking for bids over here, somebody might be bidding to his right, and the ringman's job is to notice that and get the auctioneer's attention. They're usually yelling yup or hey or yes or I've got it or something like that.
Does everyone kind of have their own thing to keep do you try and be yelling a different thing than the guy next to you? So that way auctioneer sees you?
Well, no, because he's just going to hear that it's to his right, and then he's going to look to his right. He's generally got one to his left and one to his right. If he hears one to his left, he looks to his left, and hey, there's the bid, and then same thing to his right. So as far as their own universal thing to shout, no, not so much. It's kind of a universal yup or really whatever you feel comfortable with shouting just to get his attention. But the ringman's job is also to be an extension of the hand of the auctioneer. You know, if he's trying to get the person to bid and they're looking at their friends, they're all conversing, it's the ringman's job to go out there and say, hey, pardon me, you guys are out. We need you to go $12,000, which is always uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Want to spend more money than I'll make in a year, please? You know? But I also keep a book, make sure that I know how much an item sold for and who bought it. The time of the auction. Now, this is all charity auctions that I'm doing. This as far as the car auction, it's my job to make sure that the cars show up and leave when they need to. You know, because again, these drivers, they'll fall asleep at the wheel and then just they won't know when to leave. And so I tap on the car, get them to drive out, as well as coaxing bidders into feeling like they want to buy the car.
Wow, that's crazy. Do you build relationships with the people that are out there? Like, do you know, like, some of the, let's say you're doing cars, do you end up knowing some of the dealership guys that are out there, and they're like, so they know, they can tell you what to pay attention for or anything? Is there that
Absolutely.
Type of bonding? How does
Absolutely.
That work?
It just kind of gets established over time. You know, you start learning names, you start learning what they're buying and what kind of a buyer that they are. You know, is this a guy that's got his price and he knows what he needs to get for a car or what he wants to buy this car for? And then there are those guys that'll undercut you. You know, I've had guys where I've seen the auctioneer is asking $12,000. He'll say, "I'll give you $8,000 for it," and I can't do more than eight. And then the auctioneer will get a bid at $10,000, and then Mister I can't do more than eight buys the thing at like $11,500.
Yeah.
So you know, you get that guy that just he cuts you down and tells you that he can't do anything, and yet he'll buy the car. So you do get those relationships, and I've got plenty of friends that are dealers down at that auction, and you know we're happy to see each other. We shake hands, we hug, we have coffee in the morning, and then we just go. It's all just business, you know.
Wow. Does it get ugly?
Does it get ugly? Rarely, but it does happen because people will cheat, really. They'll try to back out of a car. You know, I wasn't bid. And the thing is that these guys are not your average bidder. They're not your, here's my piece of paper and I want to bid on the car.
Yeah.
They'll raise a finger. They'll nod. They'll raise their eyebrows or they'll wink at you.
Yeah.
And then every now and again, you'll get one that'll do this for a bid. And I don't know why I just said this on a podcast, but he'll like scratch his chest as in a finger that kind of says I'm coming, you know, and then we'll take his bid, and then he buys the car, and he had no intention of buying the car. He didn't want it. He says, no, I was just scratching my chest. It's like, no, you looked me dead in the eye and then made a movement that said that you wanted to bid. So that happens
Scandal.
At times. Scandal. It happens all the time. These dealers will run each other up. You know, they'll notice that Mark's bidding and he doesn't like Mark at all, but he knows that he'll buy it for 11 grand and he's only at 10, so he'll run them all the way up to 11 grand and walk away from the car.
So, what a cruel business.
Absolutely,
man.
Absolutely. It's a used car dealer's auction, man.
Okay, I guess you got to know what you're expecting there, huh? What does a clerk do?
A clerk is she is arguably the most important member of an auction because she is the one making sure that who needs to get paid gets paid and who needs to pay pays. You know, when the auctioneer says sold it $12,000 bidder number 152, it is her job to say it was sold for $12,000 to bidder number 152. That way it is in the system, it is in the computer, he bought this car, or he bought this item, whatever it is, that way that the auction gets the money that it needs, and the people pay for the cars that they need, and they get the cars that they need.
Weird.
So, yeah. So she's the one, I say she, again, those are those gender stereotypes. It's generally a woman that's doing it because, quite frankly, guys, we suck at numbers. So they keep books better than we do.
I want to be like, that's sexist, but I'm terrible at numbers and forgetful as hell. So I can't even, like, I can't really chime out because you'll be like, well, prove it. And I'm like, okay.
Okay.
What kind of trouble have you ever gotten into? Like, have you made mistakes where people are super hacked off at you or where your dad has to take you aside and be like, hey, kid, you can't. You got to learn to do this.
Let me think of what we got there. You know, when...
It doesn't have to be you specifically. It could be you see someone get hollered at.
Dealers will get upset. And again, I always go back to dealers because I hardly ever run into trouble at a benefit auction. Everybody's drunk and having a good time. Yeah. So there's no trouble
that
to be
filet
had.
Was delicious.
That's right. But the trouble that you get into like an auto auction is a dealer needs to have this. I had this one dealer. He comes up to me and his car's rolling up. He comes up to me and says, hey, this is my car coming up here. He says, I need to get like 15 grand for it. He says, just start it at like $8,000 and run it up, right? So or something. He said start it at 12 and see where it goes.
Yeah.
The auctioneer opened it up at 12, broke it down to 8, broke it down to 4, couldn't get a bid. He got it 41, 42, 43, and he's looking around for 43. He got 3 bids on the thing for a fraction of the price that he's looking for, and he just ran the car out. It was a no sale because he needed to get 15 grand for it, and he wasn't anywhere close. We just ran the car out. The auctioneer, you know, just kind of baps me on the shoulder and says, well, I told you to start it at 8. What are you guys doing about it? And it's like, we couldn't get a bid for a fraction of the price. Okay. Yeah. So if we started it up that high, it wasn't going to get a bid either. So, you know, they'll, and they do try to muscle you a little bit because they are not afraid of making you feel bad because it'll get them what they want.
Well, because they're salesmen of that nature. Exactly. Like, that's like,
but as far as like, up at the top, trouble, you know, where the manager has to call me, I'm like, Mike, what are you doing? I've yet to run into that on the auction side of it.
Knock on wood. I mean, because like, it's very clear here. You can't, like, on the radio, you just can't drop an F-bomb. That's just like,
right. That gets you called into the boss's office.
Yeah, that's that. Or you can't, like, not play the commercials. Like, there's, like, very simple, straightforward things, so.
You know, now that you say something like that, taking an offer for a car that is just unreasonable, you know, if taking an offer is the dealer has sent the car to the auction, says, I got to get 15 grand for it, and then he sells it to where he's not able to say, hey, I've got 12.5, you want to make the sale, and then they can say yes or no. Sometimes auctioneers will put offers on it to where we have somebody in a booth that will call up the dealer and say, hey, I got 12.5 for that car. Are we willing to sell it there? But there are times when auctioneers will take an offer for way too low, where it's just unreasonable, and then the guy in our offer booth is just wasting his time, you know, for a car that needs to sell for $15,000 and he's got an offer at 8, that's wasting his time. There's too many other cars that he could be calling, because he gets hundreds of offers a day that he needs to call up these dealers and figure out if they're willing to settle on this, or if they've got to have a little bit more, you know, if they could fight him a little bit. But when it's that big of a gap, it doesn't make any sense for him to put it on an offer. So...
Are there celebrities? Are there stars of the auction world?
Of the auction world, yes. I thought you were going to ask if there were celebrities that are auctioneers, and that is also a yes. But
well, we'll do both. First of all, tell me what celebrities are auctioneers, well, and in what capacity?
First out upstairs, I know Taryn Daly is an auctioneer up at KISW. Yes.
I had no idea.
She's done auctions a little bit. At least she says she has. I haven't seen her auctioneer yet, but she says she does. I personally am an auctioneer. There's a gentleman by the name of John Curley, who is an auctioneer that is of celebrity status. I forget entirely who he is, but he's a celebrity auctioneer. And other than that, I don't know of any, you know, like movie stars that are out as an auctioneer, or singers that are out as an auctioneer or anything like that. But celebrities of the auction world, there's one that I keep hearing of. His name is Ralph Wade, who was a mega auctioneer. There's Letitia Frye, who I've heard is a mega auctioneer. And there are auctioneering championships, there are auctioneering contests, and I've met a couple
wow,
people.
You can compete?
Absolutely. There is the Western Livestock Auctioneering Championship, which I believe is the videos that were used for the hip hop. There's the International Auctioneers Champion, I believe is what it's called. There's auctioneering competitions all over the place, and I actually work with a 3-time world champion auctioneer and a gentleman who just recently won his auctioneering championship. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So you're working with some serious pedigree.
That's right. I'm working with some top-tier auctioneers, man.
Now, I didn't know if it was an American thing, if auctioneering, like square dancing, is an American idea or not, but I had my buddy Ross, a British guy, in here, and I was like, do you guys have auctioneering? And he was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So you can never understand a damn word any of them are saying, and sometimes you can understand the price. Then I started thinking about, like, other cultures. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of like of a Japanese auction?
I have, actually. I was just about to bring that one up. I forget. I saw it on a TV show. I think it was that World's Biggest Tuna or whatever it was, but they were selling them at auction at a Japanese market. And I can't understand Japanese in the first place, and
sure.
So I couldn't even come close to understanding a Japanese auctioneer. But it's all kind of the same thing. They're just asking for a price, and they're just trying to do it in a rapid fashion. So
that's crazy, man.
But yeah,
well, to be able to compete, like I'm looking at you right now, and you've got a hat on that says Western College of Auctioneering.
Yep. Just graduated last month,
Billings, Montana. Mm-hmm. Did you like online study or something like that? I know you've been working here, so how did you...
It is a 10-day course over in Billings, Montana.
Cool.
They do send you a little bit of material to practice. They send you a couple tongue twisters. They send you some number drills to work on and some audio files to show you how exactly it's supposed to go. And then you go over there, and then you spend 10 grueling, intense days trying to become an auctioneer, learning a rhythm, learning the numbers, going back and forth and back and forth, and getting in front of people and selling items and learning where you need to... need to work and how numbers need to go. So,
what's the difference between having gone to auctioneering college now? You can say, what's different than before you did it?
I'm more adept at how to say different numbers. I've learned a tempo. I've learned to keep a tempo, whereas before I was just kind of trying to go as fast as I could because that's what auctioneers do. They talk really fast.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to talk as fast as I could, whereas now I just try to keep a tempo with it. And I learned a little bit more about the politics of auctioneering, and I learned the different types of auctioneering and how you go about doing those types of auctions. So,
wow. Give me a couple examples of pretty different types of auctions where you'd need to know the different types.
there's a video online of one of my instructors, and I've known him since I was 5 years old. His name is Jeff Stokes. Very, very talented auctioneer and an incredibly energetic and great instructor. And he went through the different types of auctions, and he actually did the different kinds of auction chants, which I can't do to save my life.
Okay.
But he said the auction style depends entirely on what kind of auction that you're having. You know, if you were at an art auction, then the auctioneer would chant very slow. He'd say, okay, and I've got $1,000, now somebody give $15 or $2,000. I've got $2,000 bid, and now $3,000, right? It's very slow. It's very methodical. It still has that kind of a tempo, but it's very slow, very broad, and when they're paying the prices that they're paying, you really need to say how much they're spending, because if they're spending $415,000 on a painting, they need to know that they are about to spend $415,000 on a painting. Whereas with an auto auction, like I said, then you get that faster pace, that 14 and a 1, but a bit not 1 and not 2, but a bit not 3 and not 5, but a bit not 6 and not 7, but a bit 8 and 9, right? It just goes fast because you're trying to crank out these cars as fast as you can, because they don't need the pomp and circumstance of like a charity auction, which the auctioneer will be, I've got $500 here, now somebody give $1,000. I need $1,000. I got $500 here, somebody give $1,000 has been enough, 15, right? So it's very grand. It's very energetic, and entertaining is the purpose of a charity auction. So, like I said, when you're doing these auctions, you need to figure out why you're doing them. You know, whereas at a car auction, these guys are here to do business. They're here to work. They're here to find what's going to make them a living. So they need to move it quickly. They don't care about the style of the chant or how pretty he sounds or how entertaining he is. They need to get cars in and out. Whereas at a benefit auction, this is a show. This is a performance. Everybody's drinking wine. They're gowned up.
You want them to come back next year.
Exactly. You want to have a good event for next year. So you do have that big booming and grand. And here we are. We're at the auction. We're going to raise money for Boys and Girls Club or JDRF or whatever your cause is for that night. Whereas you're at an art auction, like I said, you need them to know how much they're spending. You're at a real estate auction, which everybody's trying to buy a house for as cheap as they can. Oh. You're at an antique auction, you know. So you gotta know what environment you're in and have your chant reflect that.
Wow, that's fascinating. Now, are there any minimum requirements? Like, what does it take to get up there and be an auctioneer? You just graduated recently from the Western College of Auctioneering in Billings, Montana, but you were doing it before that.
Right. Some of it's who you know. Actually, a lot of it's who you know.
Sure.
Kind of like
anything fun.
Right. Kind of like here in radio, you know, sometimes who you know really helps you get there. But really, the requirement for being an auctioneer is an auctioneer's license.
How do you get that?
Go to the DOL. They don't just do driver's licenses. You can also get an auctioneer's license, and you need to be insured.
Oh.
Yeah. You need like a $5,000 insurance bond or something like that, just in case somebody backs out of a bid, then the item can get paid for, or whatever it is.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, and in the 25 to 30 years that my old man has been doing this, that has never happened.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it is not a problem.
So as far as radio versus auctioneering, do you see it as a one or the other? Do you have one that you'd rather do, or can they coexist throughout life?
I'm pretty sure they can coexist, and that is entirely my goal, because I do love doing auctioneering, and I love being on the radio. I'm trying to enjoy my life, and I'm sure I can marry the two, because auctions generally happen in the morning and my show's on in the afternoon. So, you know, I come in with my khakis and my button down on a Wednesday morning, and then I just go regular dress with shorts and t-shirt the rest of the day. You know, the benefit auctions, I'm not generally doing a whole lot of events for the station on weekends, so I can do benefit auctions on the weekends. I just kind of marry the two and make them work.
Wow, this is fascinating, dude. I want to come out and watch you do this sometime. Is that possible?
I think we can make that happen.
Oh,
I got a feeling we can make that happen. I can see if I can pull some strings here.
Dude, thanks for coming in.
Absolutely, brother. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to So You're in Seattle with Gregor. Follow him on Twitter at HeyGregor Find more episodes online at SoYou'reInSeattle.com. So You're in Seattle is a Burrito Butt production.
Yeah, you're a good dog, Chowder.